front of the red column for the Fighting Bills.
Base hit down the left field line. Greg scores.
Who is it? Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins ball near third. This game is over.
Second deck walk off home run. Grand slam, Bryce Harper.
That's what I call hitting season.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 471. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Well, coming up, we're going to have a little bit more of an upbeat podcast here this week because the Phillies have won three games in a row, the first three games of their series against the Milwaukee Brewers, and now are a game over 500. So we'll talk about the first three games of this Brewers series. Plus, the minor league season is officially underway, and some of the Phillies' best prospects have already been in action as we are recording this here on Wednesday night. And I'm going to talk to the great Matt Winkleman of Phillies Minor Thoughts, probably the most plugged-in guy on Phillies minor league prospects that you will find in the business. And he's going to talk to us about the rosters and the players to watch for as the season rolls along. So we'll talk to him in just a few minutes as well. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. Just a quick reminder before we get into the show to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. Lots of great bonus content up there for you. I've got a brand new video series out there called Cards on the Table. I had Ryan Fagan of the Sporting News, also a big baseball card guy, join me on the show this week. So you got to make sure you sign up on the $5 a month tier, the Jimmy Rollins tier, as we're calling it over at the Hittin' Season Patreon, and sign up on that tier to get access to that video series as well as the podcast that Justin and Chris Jones do called Absolutely Hammered. It is fantastic, and all the other great content we have there as well. So don't forget to tell your friends about the Hittin' Season Patreon. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season. All right, let's get into the show. And the Phillies and Brewers, this is not the way we expected this series to start, but the Phillies have taken the first three games from the National League Central leading Milwaukee Brewers in Citizens Bank Park. They have finally put together a winning streak after beating the Brewers 5-4 on Wednesday night. They are back over the 500 mark for the first time since April 18th at 16-15, and they have won the first three of this four-game series. Now, what's really amazing, another one-run game for the Phillies here this season. They have played a ton of one-run games. That was their 15th one-run game so far this year. Nearly half of their games have been decided by one run or less, and the Phillies doing pretty good in that regard. 9-6 in one-run games so far here in the early going of the season. So a little bit of an anomaly, but that just tells you how good, really, the bullpen has been. I know the bullpen ERA is high, but that's, I think, largely due to a couple of blowouts, a couple of individual performances, mostly by guys like David Hale. Connor Brogdon had a really bad outing not too long ago, and so there have been a few outings by a couple of relievers that have ballooned their ERA, but for the most part, especially this week, the Phillies relief pitchers have done a pretty good job. The offense has not exactly been pouring the runs on, but they've been giving their starters early leads. Aaron Nola had a fantastic start. It was a pretty good start on Tuesday night. Wasn't able to go too deep into the game, but gave them six innings. I think he threw 114 pitches to do it. So the Phillies have needed a lot of high leverage innings from their relievers so far this season, maybe more than any other team in baseball. And it was made even more tense this week because of how close the games were late and the limited relievers that Joe Girardi has had access to. He needed Hector Neris to throw a 40-pitch, 5-out save in the first game of the series on Monday to close out a one-run win. And then on Tuesday night, Sam Coonrod returned the favor with another 5-out save to close out another one-run win. And then in the game here on Wednesday, the Phillies got great bullpen work after Chase Anderson staked to a 5-0 lead, could only go a little over four innings. Brandon Kinsler, Matt Moore. Moore, by the way, had not pitched in 18 days. He threw a scoreless seventh inning. Aniel De Los Santos, who finally made it into a game after a lineup card snafu that I'm going to tell you about in just a minute, he threw a scoreless eighth inning. And then Jose Alvarado, in his first game back following his two-game suspension, threw the ball really, really well, threw a scoreless ninth. And the Phillies' bullpen, really, a big reason why they were able to hold on to some late leads, although it was the bullpen, the middle relievers in some of these games that allowed the game to get a little bit close. But at the end of the day, the high leverage relievers pitching at the end of the ball games have done the job for the Phillies here over the last three games. It has not been pretty, but they are getting it done. the offense has been screwy in this series. They've been scoring a lot of runs early and then essentially just shutting down for the rest of the game after that. In Monday's game, they scored two runs in the first, two runs in the second to take a 4-1 lead, and then didn't score again the rest of the game, although they, again, managed to hold on for a 4-3 victory. And then in the game on Tuesday, they scored one in the first and then five in the third to take a 6-1 lead on Milwaukee, and then Milwaukee came back with four in the seventh and made it a close game again. But the Phillies, again, late-inning relievers pulled it out for a 6-5 victory. And then here in the game on Wednesday, the Phillies score five runs in the first inning, thanks to a Didi Gregorius grand slam, and then get just one hit the rest of the way, forcing Chase Anderson and the rest of the Phillies bullpen to try and keep the comeback Brewers from finishing things off. Got to be frustrating if you're a Milwaukee fan to, in each of these games, get down early and scratch and claw your way back only to finish a run short each and every time. Some good news, Andrew McCutchen looks like he might be heating up. He had two home runs in the game on Tuesday, and then after a leadoff double to start Wednesday night's game, was 8 for 25 with two doubles and three home runs in the eight games since he was benched in St. Louis last week. And we've talked a lot about Andrew McCutchen. The Phillies really don't have a backup plan for Andrew McCutchen. They need him to hit. They need him to be a quality, solid leadoff man in this lineup. If he's not doing that, this lineup doesn't work. Bryce Harper doesn't come to the plate with runners on base. JT Realmuto doesn't come to the plate with runners on base. Didi Gregorius doesn't come to the plate with runners on base and hit his eighth grand slam of his career. Didi Gregorius is, by the way, absolutely money with the bases loaded. Maybe the best bases loaded hitter in baseball. Didi Gregorius' grand slam, the eighth of his career, gave the Phillies that 5-1 lead. And if Andrew McCutchen's getting on base like he did in the first inning of this game, and he hit two home runs, one in the first and one in the third inning of the game on Tuesday, I want to say. Regardless, Andrew McCutchen heating up would be enormous for this baseball team. They need McCutchen to get it going here and just not be an automatic out. I mean, he doesn't need to hit over 300. He doesn't need to hit 30 home runs, but he needs to get on base at a 350 clip and set the table for this lineup and make the plays, make the routine plays in left field, which is something he hasn't been able to do that for most of the 2021 season thus far, although, of course, like we've been saying all along, still a long way to go in this season. The Phillies have gotten some good news on the injury front. First of all, Bryce Harper was taking some grounders at second today. It doesn't look like he's too far off from rejoining the team. Luckily, he doesn't require an injured list stint, so hopefully the Phillies will have their MVP candidate back in the lineup within the next day or two. Gene Segura played for Lehigh Valley again on Wednesday night and will be reevaluated after that. Looks like he could rejoin the team by the end of the week. Segura was off to a phenomenal start here in the 2021 season, hitting .333 before he went on the disabled list, one of the Phillies' most productive hitters on the season. So they will be happy to have him back in the lineup. And that will push Nick Maton out of the everyday job at second base. And the Phillies are really working him hard in center field. That's right. They're going to try and turn another infielder into a center fielder. And make no mistake, Nick Maton has played extremely well since coming up. He's gotten hits. He's been a doubles machine. He's really been a little bit of a spark plug near the bottom of the lineup. And so you can understand, given how dreadful the production has been from Odubel Herrera, and now with Scott Kingery going on the injured list, with Roman Quinn going on the injured list, and Scott Kingery getting called back up here for the game on Wednesday night, there still isn't a really good solution in center field. So why not try Nick Maton? I would prefer to see this team go out and maybe trade for a center fielder to get a real legitimate center fielder on this team. And who might those people be, you might be asking yourself. We'll get into that here in just a second. But Mickey Moniak also has been recalled from AAA Lehigh Valley. So Moniak and Scott Kingery both. Scott Kingery is probably going to play some infield, but Moniak and Kingery are both going to be rotating in the outfield with Bryce Harper out and with Roman Quinn out, splitting time in center and right field. And the Phillies really still don't have a plan for center field internally, which is why they have turned their lonely eyes to Nick Maton. So look for him to get that chance, especially when Segura comes back, because the Phillies are just looking for any kind of production they can get out in center field. But that kind of brings us to an interesting question. as we look at this Phillies roster, as we look at this team, as we begin the month of May, we have a team that is one game over 500, still has a negative run differential in baseball, but holds a game and a half lead in the National League East, as the Atlanta Braves are 14-16, a game and a half behind the Phils. The Washington Nationals also a game and a half behind the Phillies. The New York Mets split a doubleheader against the Cardinals on Wednesday, so they're actually just a game behind Philadelphia at 12-13, and Miami, again, it is just crazy. Miami has won two in a row. They're still three games under 500 in last place, two games behind the Phillies, but with the only team in the division with a positive run differential, plus 18. I mean, it's not even close. The Atlanta Braves are negative 9. The Phillies are negative 14. Washington's negative 21. New York Mets are negative 16. I mean, it's not even close. How do the Marlins, how are they have a 13-16 record with a plus 18 run differential while every other team in the division has been just awful? Really a bizarre start to the National League East. But you're looking at a Phillies team that, for all of its warts, and those warts are plentiful, they are in first place in the National League East, and they are riding a three-game winning streak that could just as easily be followed by a three-game losing streak at this point, because there are holes on this team. So what is this team's biggest need right now? They desperately need Archie Bradley back. That was their big free agent acquisition for the bullpen this offseason. Hopefully he's going to be back pretty soon, but we still don't have a real timetable on when Archie Bradley is going to be back. So Dave Dombrowski should be scouring the relief pitcher market to maybe get a couple extra arms in here so we don't ever have to see David Hale again. Or maybe they just need to bring up somebody else from the minors to get rid of David Hale and give this team some reliable innings in the middle part of the games. But it also wouldn't behoove Dave Dombrowski to take a look at the reliever market. The Phillies could also be looking at starting pitching. With Matt Moore and Chase Anderson and Vince Velasquez, not very reliable. I mean, again, Chase Anderson got a 5-0 lead on Wednesday and couldn't even get through the fifth inning. I mean, it's just not what you want to see, even from a number five starter. To get you need your five starter to give you something, which is why the Phillies are starting to, it sounds like they're starting to stretch out Spencer Howard because they want to have him start some games. He's not going to be a guy that goes 6-7 innings, but if Chase Anderson's only going to go 4, Vince Velasquez is only going to go 4. Velasquez had a really good game, actually, in Monday's game, throwing 6 innings. It was his best start, I think, in 2 years. So Vince Velasquez had a really good start in the game against Milwaukee on Monday. So good for him. He's going to stay in the rotation for a little while longer. And Matt Moore is going to be, I guess, a bullpen guy for just a little while. And that's why he came into the game on Wednesday and was very effective in that role. Again, having not pitched for 18 days, came right out and mowed some guys down. But it just goes to show you the starting pitching depth on this team, as we all know, is not what we would want it to be. So you might see Dave Dombrowski potentially be looking for the starting pitcher market. To me, I still think the most important need on this team is to get a center fielder. And there are options out there. There are guys like Jared Dyson from the Royals and the guy used to play for the Nationals. Michael A. Taylor. I don't know why I couldn't think of Michael A. Taylor's name. Michael A. Taylor, who plays good defense and can hit the ball a little bit. He's not going to be great, but he's certainly better than what the Phillies have been running out there. Michael A. Taylor probably doesn't cost you a whole lot, and you can get him pretty cheaply, and he would seem to fit with the kind of move that the Phillies would make at this particular time in the season. Now, there are some bigger name options out there. A guy like Joey Gallo is a name that's been circulating. He plays for a dead last place team in the Texas Rangers. He actually can play center, even though he's a mashing power hitter. He plays a pretty decent center field. So he would cost you a little bit more. I don't know how much he'd cost you in terms of prospects, because Joey Gallo is not a complete player, but Gallo is a guy who can hit you 30 to 40 home runs from and play a decent center field. So he might not hit much over 220. He's kind of like a Dave Kingman type player from back in the day, but he's going to walk a ton. He'll get you an on-base percentage of around 320 or something. He'll slug you near 500. The isolated power will be off the charts because he's going to hit so many home runs. That's a move you could see Dave Dombrowski potentially make later in the season. I could see something like that happening, and I don't think it would require a ton. As we'll hear from Matt in just a minute, the Phillies don't have a ton of minor league trade capital, and they're not going to be giving away the guys who can help them in the near future. So I would not expect to see him pull a huge rabbit out of his hat, but what would you rather see this team? What is this team's biggest need to you? Where would you want to see this team go? Relief pitcher, starting pitching, or center field? To me, it's center field. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. Hit me up on Twitter at John Stolness and let me know what you think. What is this team's biggest need? If they were going to go out and make a trade right now, do they need relief pitching? Do they need another starting pitcher? Or do they need a center fielder? That takes us to the final item here on the list from this from the first three games of this Brewers series, and that's the lineup card snafu. What a weird situation in Tuesday's game. So the way this works now, managers used to handwrite, used to fill out the lineup card, which just lists all 26 players on the roster for that particular game. And those lineup cards are submitted to the Milwaukee Brewers or the visiting team, whoever it is, and the umpires so that they know who's available for which team. Well, over the last two seasons, that process has been automated by Major League Baseball. And in this case, and it's happened before, the umpires did not get the same lineup card that the Phillies and Brewers got. The Brewers got the correct lineup card. They got a lineup card that showed before the game the Phillies had sent down, had called up Eniel De Los Santos and put him on the 26-man roster. Christopher Sanchez was sent down to AAA. Well, that was on the Brewers. That was on the Brewers' scorecard, but not the umpires. And I guess it just depends on when the umpires printed their cards out. It could really be something that's stupid, but that's what it sounds like. Depending on when the prospective stakeholders print out their cards, that's the roster that you get. That's the scorecard that you get. And so when Eniel De Los Santos came into the game to warm up, the umpires wouldn't let him pitch because he wasn't on their scorecard. He wasn't on their lineup card. So Joe Girardi was left scrambling and had to bring in David Hale on. You know, without any warm-up pitches, and he was given as much time to warm up as he needed. But it almost cost the Phillies the game. It's one of the reasons they needed Hector Neris to. It's one of the reasons why they needed Sam Coonrod to pitch to get a five-out save. They weren't planning on doing it that way, but a boneheaded lack of attention to detail on the part of Joe Girardi, and he admitted as much after the game. And Joe Girardi, again, not exactly bathing himself in glory over these last few weeks, but he has had to deal with a bullpen that is short on talent on some nights. His own rules on restricting reliever usage, I get it. I get what he wants to do, and we talked about this on the previous episode of Hittin' Season, but it has hurt them here in the early going. But the lineup card snafu, can you imagine if that happened to Gabe Kapler? I mean, it really is akin to the Hobie Milner thing. Really, if we're being honest about it, it was kind of like the bullpen off the hook thing, the bullpen phone off the hook thing back in Baltimore in June of 2015. Remember Rob McClure waving the white towel? It was very similar to those two types of things, but because Joe Girardi is seen and portrayed as the wise veteran in the room, which of course he is, he doesn't take the same kind of heat that I am sure Gabe Kapler would have taken in this situation. And I'm not a Gabe Kapler defender. You guys know me. I'm not a Gabe Kapler defender, but it's definitely, you know, Joe Girardi took some heat for it, but not the same kind of heat that Gabe Kapler would have taken if that had happened to him. And I'm not saying we need to feel sorry for Gabe Kapler. Gabe Kapler deserved to be let go. He's having a lot of success out in San Francisco. Good for him. I think the Phillies are better off with Joe Girardi, but you know, I think that with Girardi, we are seeing a guy who's not terribly sharp so far here in the early going of the 2021 season. But maybe that'll all turn around again. It's April for everybody. And so we'll just have to hope that this team can overcome some of these early hiccups, these early roadblocks, these stumbles, and can go on a little bit of a run. But this is a roster with a lot of holes in it still. And if they're able to get the offense cooking, if Andrew McCutchen's going to heat up, they get Gene Segura back. And I think some of the underlying statistics indicate Alec Bohm is going to start to hit. You get Bryce Harper back off the injured list. JT Realmuto continues to be one of the best players in baseball. And Didi Gregorius is heating up a little bit. Maybe this baseball team can actually start to win baseball games, but that's putting the cart before the horse as we try to finish off the four-game sweep of the Milwaukee Brewers on Thursday afternoon. All right, enough talk about the Major League team. Let's talk about the minors as the Phillies minor league season has gotten underway. We're going to talk to Matt Winkleman about that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. Well, last year we didn't have a minor league baseball season. In fact, we barely had a major league baseball season. And finally now we have the minors back. We don't have to worry about alternate sites. We don't have to worry about taxi squads and all that kind of stuff. We're actually going to see Phillies prospects playing in minor league stadiums against other minor league players. And, you know, hopefully that'll give us a better sense as far as where our prospects are with the Phillies. And joining me is probably the guy who's the most dialed in on Phillies prospects of anyone else in baseball, Matt Winkelman. You, of course, know him on Twitter at @Matt_Winkelman. He also writes for the website, PhilliesMinorThoughts.com, where you can find his top prospects list for the Phillies there. As always, happy to be joined by Matt on the podcast. Matt, thanks for coming back on Hittin' Season. How are you, man?
I'm good. It's actually really nice to talk about prospects and have games going on right now.
Yeah. And that was my first question, is because there were no minor leagues last year, how difficult do you think it is, or I guess was, for prospectors, prospect lists, prospect experts to really have a good sense of where each team's prospects were heading into this year? Because you didn't get to see games. I know a lot of those alternate site games were televised last year. Some of them were streamed, but you know, it's not really the same thing. So was it, obviously it was more challenging, I would guess, to kind of determine an order of prospects or a list of prospects, or you know, who should be moved where. How difficult was it this year?
It was pretty much impossible. I know most sites ended up talking to a lot more people with teams about their own prospects. Normally, I mean, yes, you want to hear from the Phillies about the Phillies prospects, but you don't want to take that as your source of truth all the time. Right. And the Phillies had no scouts at any of their games. Some people got some of the TrackMan data from alternate site and Instructs, but there's definitely guys we're going to miss, and a couple kind of breakouts in progress where you're not sure if you want to believe four two-inning stints as the new normal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, so much of it is reliant on, and what's great is, you know, minor league baseball now has MILB.TV, which, you know, is a godsend for people who follow prospects, I'm sure. But yeah, I mean, every time you ask the Phillies about their prospects, there's not a single guy they don't like, you know, not a single guy who's going to be a great player. And you know, as I was looking over the Lehigh Valley roster, let's start with the Iron Pigs and talk a little bit about Lehigh Valley's roster. Obviously, the number one pick, Spencer Howard, and number one prospect, Spencer Howard, is there. But as you look through the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs roster, it's not what it used to be back in the old days of 2016, 2017, 2018, when the Phillies' top prospects were all right there. Which players on the Iron Pigs roster right now, outside of Spencer Howard, are you the most excited to watch this year?
I'm excited to see what Bailey Falter does. I mean, he's not a big time prospect. I think he's probably a back end, like number four starter ceiling, but he saw his velocity tick up during the alternate site, or not, well, during Instructs. He wasn't actually at the alt site. And he's mostly held it. But like lefty in the low 90s. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe what everyone hoped Matt Moore could be, but big guy, throws pitches for strikes. I mean, Rafael Marchand is probably the best. Well, he might be the only hitting prospect now that I look, with Moniak's in the majors, Maton's in the majors. And Christopher Sanchez and Damon Jones in relief looks are interesting given the major league bullpen, but it's really not a lot of exciting things.
Yeah, that was the impression that I got as I was looking over it. I didn't see a whole lot there that really, I mean, Derek Hall's a guy who, you know, I think displayed some big power in the spring, but, you know, it seems as though like he's another one of those kind of quad A guys that, you know, people that, you know, put up a lot of numbers, but, you know, might not necessarily equate to anything tangible at the major league level. So if the Phillies, you know, if the Phillies do run into trouble and they need, you know, they need to grab another starter from someplace, like let's just say Velasquez gets injured or somebody like that. You know, they brought up Eniel De Los Santos and he's going to be in the bullpen. He pitched tonight in the game on Wednesday night against the Brewers. But who do they have in the starting rotation for Lehigh Valley that if there was an emergency that came up, the Phillies would be able to go down to the Iron Pigs and bring somebody up?
So I'm still trying to figure out who the number five starter is, but the first four are very familiar names. Mm-hmm. Adonis Medina started yesterday. Spencer Howard started today. Ranger Suarez and Bailey Falter go later in the week. all four are on the 40-man roster. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of them are fully stretched out where you say they could give you five, but I mean, Chase Anderson just gave them four. So mm-hmm. if you need to rely on it, I think that's the who they go to. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, I mean, well, let's talk a little bit about Spencer Howard. What is their plan for him right now? Because at the start of the season, they seem to be all in on making him a bullpen guy just to manage his innings workload. But obviously, it sounds as though because of the starting pitching depth or lack of depth in the organization, that they're reversing course and trying to use him as a starter.
They've not really been fully transparent about what's going on. He pitched, I think, about 50 innings today, or not 50 innings, 50 pitches. Boy,
I was going to say that's aggressive.
44 pitches today. Okay. So he's not even, and that was two, and he came out for the third. So okay. I don't know if they're ever planning on getting him to like a full starter workload, but I think some of it'll be how does he adapt. I think
like maybe it's like an opener, like where you pitch him three or four innings and have like another starter kind of ready to go after him. Is that kind of the idea?
I think it's a little different. I mean, opener is more like you have your single inning.
Sure.
But yeah, maybe yeah. A little bit more of
a piggyback. Piggyback.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I mean, if we go down through the rest of the minors, is essentially their rotations all the way down is some version of piggyback. Cause mm-hmm. no one threw last year except for the guys who are currently in the majors.
Right. All right. So let's move on to Reading here. And as we look at the Reading roster again, the name that jumps out, you know, and it's not necessarily because I think he's going to reach the majors, is Mark Appel is back in the Phillies organization. I totally forgot about that. Mark Appel is on the Reading roster. And so, you know, is he going to get, how much action is he going to get as a starter? Do you think, you know, is he going to take a turn every fifth day, or is he going to be a reliever?
He is going to get a turn every fifth day as part of their piggybacks in Reading. Mm-hmm. So I think right now he's paired up with left-hander Taylor Lehman. Mm-hmm. So I expect to see him to get like two-ish innings, and they'll go from there. The Phillies said he was in the mid-90s in Florida. Now, was that just a couple pitches? We'll see.
Yeah.
He seems to possibly be healthy, which was the main thing that ended his time there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good story.
Yeah, it's a very good story. It'd be very cool if you're able to make the comeback, although I don't really think anybody's holding their breath. He's by far the oldest player on the team by at least a few years. So, I mean, as far as prospects go down in Reading, I think the name that jumps out is Francisco Morales, correct?
Yes, he's the only, I think, even top 20 prospect on this team, and mm-hmm. one of the few actual kind of prospects of any note here. Oh God, I just had the phone buzz that said, oh, the Phillies have won the game.
Yeah. Jose Alvarado closes down the ninth inning and looked pretty impressive doing it actually. Yeah.
So Morales is 20. He was their big international signing a bunch of years ago. Big right-hander. Mm-hmm. Was up to 97 today. The real selling point is a slider with that you can really manipulate. Control questions, change up questions, though it looked like he threw a couple good ones. Mm-hmm. Tonight he's on the 40-man roster, so he could see starter reliever time this year if things go well.
Okay.
But it's kind of an aggressive push to Reading. But he's a really good pitching prospect, whichever role he ends up in.
Yeah, I mean, obviously everybody's excited about Morales, and you know, hopefully, you know, maybe there's a chance we see him at the big league. Is there a chance? What are the chances we see him at the big league level? I mean, he's not that far away.
I mean, we could see August or September if they need an arm. He certainly could be somebody that impacts the bullpen, or if they're looking for that second half of a Spencer Howard tandem, and you're saying we're only gonna rely on this guy for three innings every 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're not deep enough in pitching to say anyone is totally out of the question. Mm-hmm. For this year.
All right, well, let's move on down to Clearwater. And, you know, I guess let me ask you the question. Where, you know, we've looked through the Lehigh Valley roster, not a lot of great prospects there. We look at the Reading roster outside of Franklin Morales, not a lot of great prospects there. So I imagine most of the team's quote-unquote really good prospects are down in the low minors. Is Clearwater going to be a place where we find some of these guys?
It is, and we're actually jumping out of order because Clearwater is now the lowest of the full season
That's
leagues
right.
this year, be it they... low Jersey Shore. But while right. we're there, might as well hit it up because
all right,
second best prospect on the team McAbel,
McAbel. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, we talked about Mark Appel earlier. That's way too close. made his pro debut tonight. Was 96-98 in the first inning.
Ooh.
19-year-old was easily the best high school pitcher in the draft last year. And lost a little velocity over his two and change innings today, but mm-hmm. potential to be one of the better pitching prospects in the minors, not just in the Phillies system. Mm-hmm. Ace upside. But he's a bit off. That was his first actual game in well over a year. Because his high school season got wiped out last year.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So it could be a little bit of a climb for him to kind of get back into the flow of things, but it sounds like velocity wise, it's pretty encouraging. All right. So you've got McAbel there, who I think is probably is he the consensus number two prospect in the organization?
If he's not the number one, I mean, there was some debate of him versus Howard, just because the ceiling is really high. Mm-hmm. But then on the hitting side, you have shortstop Luis Garcia, who we saw some of this spring. He was a bit overmatched offensively, but good defensively. Could say the same with center fielder Johan Rojas, both easy top 10 prospects in the system. They're far off, but there's a lot of upside there. Same with middle infielder Casey Martin, who's played second the last two nights, but they think can play shortstop. He was their third round pick last year that they gave second round bonus to. Lots of tools, lots of swing and miss. But there's a lot of upside there. The whole rotation is made up of young arms with upside, whether it's Gunnar Mayer, who's one of the six, who's 6'6", projectable 20-year-old. Eduard Segovia is a 6-foot, righty who was up to 97 at the in Instructs. Starlin Castillo, another big money international signing with arm strength. So there's a lot of interesting arms there. It's a really raw and young team.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where the upside is.
Okay.
But then we pivot up to Jersey Shore, which is now high A.
That threw me.
and that's where they sent Bryson Stott. Maybe a bit of a conservative assignment, but I think everything's a little bit messed up this year because we didn't see that. Like, normally everyone moves up a level each year, but we didn't really have a full move up of everyone last year.
Okay.
So I think what is high A now is kind of a breed between where high A and double A kind of are. And they wanted him to experience some success in his first full run of full season.
Yeah.
But then you have some familiar names like Island Ortiz. Kevin Gowdy is still around the organization.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about Kevin Gowdy.
He's still a bit of a mystery. We didn't get velocity readings tonight. Kind of exploded in an inning. They have some other interesting arms there, whether it's Dominic Pipkin in the rotation of righty up to 98. Some of their non-drafted free agents like Billy Sullivan, who was out of the University of Delaware, who's up to 99. There's the fun story that is Mike Adams, who is 26 and teaching and coaching at one of these throwing programs and taught himself how to throw hard enough that he got himself signed.
Crazy.
Yeah. But I think you can hear as we're going through this, like, there's pockets here and there, but there's definitely less strength, but also a lot less, yes, I'm sure of this guy being good. Some of it is there is in the majors. You have Moniak and Maton are on the major league roster right now. Simon Muziati is stuck in Venezuela with a visa issue. So there's some guys missing, and there's just a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, and that's the main thing here, is there is a lot of uncertainty. But I mean, I think a lot of it too is we've known that the problems in the Phillies organization, the problems they've had developing players. They brought up Alec Bohm, who obviously has developed into a pretty good hitter, off to a little bit of a slow start. I think a lot of the peripherals are pointing to Alec Bohm picking it up here at some point in the near future. Rhys Hoskins was obviously homegrown, but a lot of the other homegrown guys that came through the system, some of them have came and gone on to other organizations, and some of them were trying to win the center field job and are no longer, Roman Quinn's on the DL. Adam Haseley went away. Scott Kingery is back in the big leagues. Is he back in the big? I know he started the season with Lehigh Valley. I didn't see.
He came back up today with Monique.
He did. I thought so.
Wynn and Joyce.
When they went to the on the injured list. Right. Okay. All right. So, I mean, so there you go. And, I think that there's just been a lack of juice coming up from the minors. Even a guy like Bohm, who hit pretty well last year and has struggled a little bit this year, has some limitations. I don't think anybody thinks we're looking at a superstar player there, but you know, maybe he flashes and has an all-star season or two along the way. Same thing kind of with Hoskins. I mean, Hoskins is a productive middle of the order hitter, but you know, never going to be the star type of player that you're hoping that you can get out of your farm system, you know, every once in a while. And we're still waiting to see if Spencer Howard is going to click and if he's going to be healthy. So I thought it was interesting that the story that came out by Matt Gelb of The Athletic on May 3rd, that back in late March, the Phillies made an interesting move, removing Rafael Chavez as its director of pitching development and promoted Travis Hergert, who was from North Iowa Area Community College, to oversee the organization's pitchers. Now it's just as an interim pitching coordinator, but seems to be more in line with what the Driveline guys want to do. And I wanted to get your thoughts on this move. First of all, on the timing of it. And second of all, like, do you agree with it? Do you think that this is the direction the Phillies should be going right now?
So the timing's weird, but on some level, once you make a decision like this, you need to make the decision. Mm-hmm. And yes, stuff was weird last year. But I also think this is somewhat of a product of Dombrowski and Fold and this new front office not charging in and wiping and cleaning house immediately upon taking charge, but really getting an assessment of the system. And it's hard to know from the outside of what the changes that are going to be brought on by this. Mm-hmm. And some of it seems to come from Caleb Cotham and really trying to actually align the major through the minors pitching development, which makes some sense because it's really tough. And we hear this all the time of guys come up and different coach tells them something completely different. Mm-hmm. And I think that was a huge problem throughout the Matt Klentak led years. As for like what is changing, and what was done well, what wasn't done well. I think Matt Gelb hit on this in his story, and it was pretty obvious to people who've followed the team that they've done well on getting those first like level of breakouts. So someone like Damon Jones, who is a real late round pick, someone like Connor Brogdon, getting them that first step where they're starting to have more velocity, they're looking interesting, but they've had a real roadblock of guys get to double A, triple A, look interesting, and then don't contribute to the majors. And some of that is definitely a lack of talent. If you're taking a guy who's not the most athletic or greatest talent to begin with, there's only so much you can get out of somebody. But also, are they not doing the things that are sustainable, things that look good in double A but aren't going to play at the major league level? Now I think it's generally a good change, but I think they need to make sure that they really get everyone on the same page. And they don't have that kind of top down of, this is what we do, now everyone do this. And a little bit more of, well, Zach Eflin, you're really good with your sinker. You should throw your sinker. Even though the quote best pitch is probably a four seam fastball up in the zone. If you can't do that, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah. Right. Hard to believe. Yeah. Hard to believe that needs to be explained to someone, but you know, that needed to be explained. Yeah.
But it's hard to know all the ins and outs of mm-hmm. what is actually going on in the system. Mostly because, well, we just missed a year.
Yeah.
But also, the Phillies really aren't the most forthcoming. I don't think many teams are very forthcoming with everything down to the smallest detail of how they're doing their development. So we're going to have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. You can't say the Phillies shouldn't make changes, but we also have learned that changing things just to change things doesn't always mean it works out well.
Right. And that's the thing, you know, it's change for change's sake is not always a good thing. So, you know, I think it's fine. You know, it's interesting to, I don't know. It's one of those things where, you know, you hear a lot of negative things about the driveline guys, but you know, there's a reason the Phillies really do seem to like the driveline guys. And, you know, with Caleb Cottom here and a new philosophy with the organization, it seems to me, the way it comes across to me, Matt, is like they still don't really kind of know exactly what they want to do. And I remember there was a tweet that Peter Gammons put out. I don't know if it was back in February or March, but that there was a disconnect in the Phillies organization between the scouting department and the minor league coaches, or the analytics and the minor league coaches. Like the scouts would be bringing it from what I could tell, the scouts would be bringing in players that they thought could play. And then the Phillies instructs, you know, the Phillies minor league development, the coaches, all these people would get these guys and just say, these guys can't play, or these guys aren't any good, or these guys can't do what we ask them to do as an organization. Do you have any insight into anything like that? You know, is there anything to that you're aware of, or is that, again, one of those things that's just kind of like buttoned up tighter than Fort Knox with the Phillies?
I'm sure you could get some people to talk through that. I don't necessarily have any complete examples on that. But I mean, even before they were bringing in more driveline coaches, we saw guys going out to driveline or to other pitching and hitting, I don't know what the right labs or mm-hmm. groups or whatever to right. improve. I think there probably was a little of a disconnect, and we saw this past draft with some of the non-drafted free agents. They brought in a lot more hard throwers and guys who kind of fit the model of, I would say, the modern baseball pitcher. But mm-hmm. And also it is difficult to look at and say, yes, this is something where we were wrong or right. But like, we've had enough prospects show up from the draft and not be great to say there has been some problems there mm-hmm. in the past.
Well, I think it's going to be an interesting change, and we'll see if it actually bears any fruit here as the minor league season goes along. I don't think this organization is going to do a 180 and become one of the best minor league systems in the league all of a sudden. But it's a slow build, and this team in this organization is still trying to build something through the minor leagues. And I guess we'll see kind of how it plays out during the course of a long summer of minor league baseball. We're actually watching minor leaguers play baseball. You can watch Phillies prospects play baseball, and we'll actually be able to get a better handle on exactly what the future of this franchise looks like down in the minors. And so make sure you're reading everything that Matt Winkelman does at Phillies Minor Thoughts, or just, you know, check him out on Twitter. He's always got tremendous thoughts on what's going on with the Phillies minor leaguers at Matt_Winkelman. Matt, thanks for coming on Hitting Season again. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, it was great to talk.
Well, in case you missed it, Baltimore Orioles left-handed starter John Means threw an absolute gem on Wednesday afternoon, a complete game no-hitter, the first for the Orioles since Jim Palmer in 1969. He shut down the Mariners with a 113-pitch, 12-strikeout effort, a truly fantastic pitching performance. And he gave up no walks and hit no batters. So why was it not a perfect game, you may be asking, if he didn't give up a hit, didn't give up a walk, and didn't hit anybody? The only batter to reach base came on a strikeout wild pitch. And then that base runner was thrown out trying to steal just after that. So John Means faced the minimum, 27 hitters. Okay? He really, in a sense, got all 27 hitters out. He struck the guy out who got on base. And that takes us to a stupid rule. I've never understood the third strike wild pitch. I've never understood that rule. I've never liked that. The wild pitch strikeout has always been stupid. Now, it's not a perfect game because Means did allow a base runner, but not in the typical way, not in a way that's really his fault. It was a wild pitch. It was the catcher's fault. I guess if you want to call it an error on the catcher, you could, but it was not an error on the play. It's a stupid rule, and it needs to go away. That's what stood between John Means and a perfect game, but that's not the stat of the week. The stat of the week is the last time before John Means that a pitcher threw a no-hitter with no walks and no hit-by-pitches with just the minimum 27 batters faced, Terry Mulholland's no-hitter for the Phillies back on August 15th, 1990, when the only runner to get on base came on a Charlie Hayes error, a third baseman Charlie Hayes error, and that runner was then eliminated on a double play by the next hitter. Terry Mulholland faced the minimum 27 batters in that game for the no-hitter. Charlie Hayes, of course, snared a line drive down the third baseline to preserve the final out of the no-hitter, so a little bit of redemption, and one of the greatest moments of my childhood. Really the first time of me watching the Phillies that I watched all the Phillies jump around and celebrate something on the mound. It was a phenomenal. One of my favorite moments in Phillies history was that night, Terry Mulholland no-hit the San Francisco Giants. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks once again to Matt Winkleman for coming on the podcast. Don't forget to tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. Help us move up those rankings by giving us a 5-star rating and giving us a review. Let us know what you think of the show. And tell your friends about the Hittin' Season Patreon as well. Go to patreon.com/hittin'season and sign up on one of the tiers we have there. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.